Hello and welcome to Car Talk from National Public Radio with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're broadcasting this week from the Avian Prestidigitation Center.
Oof.
Here at Car Talk Plaza.
I wish I could remember who sent this to us, because I don't have the piece of paper in front of me, but I'll tell you the story. Here's the story. This magician gets a job on a cruise ship.
Uh-huh.
And he soon realizes that he doesn't have to come up with a new set of tricks every week. Because what?
Different
audience every
exactly.
week. People get off the boat, 3,000 more people get on. Except the captain has a parrot. And the parrot sits there through all of his shows. And the parrot pretty soon learns all the tricks. And being a parrot and a troublemaker, the parrot starts yelling out stuff. So in the middle of a trick, the parrot says, "It's under the table." He says, "It's in his other hand." So pretty soon, the poor guy is devastated. He's ruined. And he's got to come up with all new tricks. And on the way back to port, the ship hits something. Not an iceberg, but it's a cruise ship, unless you go to Alaska, which would be stupid. The ship hits something and goes down.
It's a garbage scow.
Garbage scow, right. So the ship goes down, and wouldn't you know it, the parrot and the magician find themselves clinging to the last little bit of debris. And there, the magician is on one side holding on, and the parrot's on the other side. Hours go by, and they're just staring at each other, staring at each other. Finally, the parrot says, "Okay, I give up. Where's the ship?" I liked it.
I did, too. If you have a joke for us or you want to talk about your car, the number is 8. That's a good way
to... We should start the show with a joke every week.
Some say that
it is a joke.
The show is a
two
joke.
Two jokes.
The number is 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Sandy from Clifton Park, New York.
Hi, Sandy.
Sandy, are you calling from the bathtub?
No, does it sound like I am?
Yes, it does.
Did you just subscribe to Time Magazine?
No, it's probably because I'm calling from my work phone, which is in Hyde Park, New York, just 100 miles south of Clifton Park.
Oh, okay.
But we have a phone system here that makes that kind of funny echo, so please excuse me.
That's quite all right. It's not your fault. You know why it makes that funny sound? Because all the calls are being monitored.
Right.
To ensure.
Oh, yeah, the recording devices do that. That's right. You'll be terminated in the morning, but that's okay. In the meantime,
what's up?
Well, I have a 1997 Honda Accord with about 63,000 miles, and it has started making occasional loud noises.
Mm.
Noises of the type you might hear from a young man's car who is fiddled with his to make it sound like it needs a muffler.
Oh.
You know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the noise isn't constant. It's occasional.
It's only on my way home from work, not on my way into work.
Anything else going on when this happens?
Well, I kind of tried to think logically the way you guys do, and I noticed that...
Oh,
I tried to
who
think...
put you up to that statement?
I almost spit the coffee right across the room.
Well, I thought, what's different about my morning commute from my afternoon commute? And I realized that in the morning, it's early and it's cool, and I don't have the air conditioner on. In the afternoon, particularly last week, it was kind of warm, and I had the air conditioner on, and so the compressor was going.
Mm-hmm. Well, the compressor doesn't go all the time, you know. It does cycle on and off.
Yes.
And when you hear the noise, is there any kind of predictability to it? And do you have to be moving to hear it?
Yes, I have to be moving.
When you described this problem, you described it as sounding like a car that needs a muffler. Do you have any evidence that you don't need a muffler?
Well, the fact that the car runs quietly 85% of the time makes me think that it's something other than a muffler.
But if we could give you some scenario in which...
Or a coupon. We gave you a coupon, you might... You know,
if we gave you a scenario in which we could show you that you could occasionally have a bad muffler,
okay.
in quotes... Would you buy that? With or without the coupon?
Do you take charge cards?
Yeah, what would it take?
All right,
Sandy,
wait.
What would it take to get you into a new muffler today?
I would need a coupon for sure.
I mean, it sounds enough like needing a muffler.
Can I give you one other bit of evidence?
Sure.
This might clear it up.
Yeah, we might need two, but go ahead.
Well, I thought it was related to the compressor, so I thought, well, I'm going to try driving in the morning and put the air conditioner on, need it or not.
Oh, you have a very scientific mind.
Yes.
What do you do for a living in Hyde Park there?
I'm a marketing manager for the Culinary Institute of America.
Really?
The Culinary Institute of America.
The CIA. The
CIA. If I said I worked for the CIA, you would have hung up.
Wow.
Yep.
So you turn on the air conditioner on your way to work.
Yes.
And I'm going to tell you that it didn't make any noise.
Bingo.
Yeah.
Well, what does that tell us?
It's got nothing to do with the air conditioner.
We knew that already. Well, I mean, I'm leaning toward it being the cooling fan.
Are you?
The fan that cools off the end. You know, there are two fans on this car. I think one comes on automatically when you turn on the AC, and the other cycles on and off as the engine coolant temperature dictates. And it may be that you're hearing the fan hitting something. Did you have a little fender bender with this car ever?
Uh-oh, you found me out. In January, I had a front-end collision.
Aha! Play the music, Dad! And I'd be willing to bet that your fan is hitting its shroud and making the noise, which will sound not unlike a baseball card in the spokes of one's bicycle.
The fan shroud.
Yeah.
And you could
confuse it with the sound of a bad muffler.
Oh, I could confuse a lot of things.
But I think that's what you got going here.
I like that. I like it.
I like it, too.
Well, Sandy.
Well, thanks, fellas. I appreciate it.
See ya.
Come down to the CIA for lunch.
All right. See you later. Thanks for the invite.
It'll be a secret between you and us.
Bye-bye. 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, guys. This is Barry from Flint, Michigan.
Barry, what's happening, man?
Barry with a Y?
Yeah, that's a Y at the end.
Okay.
Okay. Believe it or not, I have a problem with unbelievably huge numbers of dead bugs on my windshield. When I drive to work, when I drive home from work, I have to wash or clean the windshield at least every day, sometimes twice a day when I get to work, in order to practically even see through it. My wife says it's just because I drive too fast, and it brings back the old debate about running versus walking in the rain. Does it matter if you're running or walking?
Oh, yeah.
If I drive slower, am I going to have fewer dead bugs, or is it just because I'm a maniac and I drive too fast?
She's right. You drive too fast.
I drive too fast.
Just like you're going to get wetter if you run through the rain.
Wait a second.
Except you're going to get there sooner, so that'll make you less wet.
You'll have more time to dry your clothes
depends
off.
Depends on how far you have to go.
Well, no, I see that in this instance, don't listen to a word he's telling you. No, yeah, if you drive fast, you're going to get more dead bugs on
your
windshield.
You are.
But the aerodynamics, they improve as you go faster. Doesn't the air kind of slip over the windshield?
It does, and as it slips over the windshield, any bug that's in your path gets croaked.
I see. Your theory is
they're going to go right over the roof.
They're going to go over the top.
Yes.
Well, the faster you go, the more of them are going to go over the top? Is that your theory?
Yeah.
I like it, but it's wrong.
You know, but there are things you probably have seen going down the road, trucks or maybe even cars that have a bug deflector on the hood.
Does that work?
That works.
Well, we're hoping to find out from you, Barry.
Okay.
Well, that does work.
Oh.
I think it works.
Oh, I think you should sound a little more positive.
They've been around for so long.
It has to work.
It makes so much sense.
But I think what it does is it just changes the flow so that the bugs either hit this thing or the ones which don't hit it go flying over the roof and miss your windshield.
They hit the guy behind you.
They hit the guy behind you, exactly. Yeah.
But
maybe you're the guy behind the guy with the bug thing. You ever think of that?
But you notice that thing, that bug deflector thing, clearly interferes with the nice smooth flow.
Yeah.
Right. So
and that's what makes it work, which would mean that without it, and therefore having the beautiful aerodynamics, you do get more bugs.
So the more aerodynamic cars, like the Corvettes and the Ferraris, they get a lot of bugs, even though they're really aerodynamic?
Well, no, I think the speed is the critical factor.
Speed, yeah.
If you're driving at 20 miles an hour, you're not going to have any dead bodies on the windshield.
No, I guess they're just going to bump into the windshield and say, oh, another car, and they'll
fly away. You ever get hit by a bug when you're riding your bicycle?
Oh,
it feels like someone hit you with
open.
A 2x4. Yeah, there's a lot of momentum there.
Yeah.
But I think that
your wife is absolutely right, because the driving that you do, you shouldn't come home full of bugs on the windshield. That's crazy.
Okay.
Yeah, what do you drive? Are you driving something like an Isuzu Trooper?
Well, no. It's a Mercedes. The one that goes too fast.
The one that goes too fast. Yeah. And so you drive like a maniac, and your wife, as usual, is absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah. We won't tell if you won't.
Okay, I won't tell.
See you, Barry.
Thanks a lot.
Slow down.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
1-888-CAR-TALK or 1-888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, my name is Mikri, and I live in Mendocino, California.
Mikri?
Yes.
M-I-K-R-I?
No.
All right.
Mikri, M-I-C-H?
Yeah, M-I-C-H-R-I. And
Mikri. Well, you don't hold.
You're not getting by with that. Hold on a minute.
And where in California?
Mendocino.
Mendocino.
Mm-hmm.
Mikri.
Mm-hmm. And I didn't make it up. My parents actually named me Mikri.
Is it a combination? I mean, just a hint. Is it a combination of two names, like Michelle and Ronaldo, your parents' names?
No. They picked it out of the Old Testament in the list of names and names and names.
Oh, this is an Old Testament name?
Uh-huh.
So it had nothing to do with Duncan Rinaldi. Whatever happened to Duncan Rinaldi?
Oh, it's funny you should ask.
You know who Duncan Rinaldi is, Mikri?
Of course she doesn't.
No, I don't.
She's only 25 years old. How's she going to know Duncan Rinaldi? Wasn't it Ronaldo?
Duncan
Rinaldi. It might be Rinaldi.
I think Rinaldi. Yeah. Duncan Rinaldi, I believe, was the Cisco kid.
You bet he was.
Oh,
yeah. Cisco.
Yeah, of course, he wasn't the Cisco kid when my brother listened, because the real Cisco kid was the Cisco kid when my brother listened on the radio. I remember the TV version, of course. Anyway, what do you do out there in Mendocino?
Well, right now I'm a Jill of all trades, and I'm doing anything I can, but I got my credential to teach high school math, and I live in a small area, so I'm waiting for one of the guys to retire so I can take his job.
Oh, really?
We can take care of that.
Oh, yeah.
We'll be happy to help you with that.
We have operatives on the West Coast, East Coast, North Coast.
Sure. Just give us a couple of names and addresses and the hierarchy in which they're ready to retire, and you'll have a couple of job offers in a week.
Right on.
So what's up? What's wrong with the heap of a car that you're trying to use to get to school when you can get to school?
Well, I'm working on my car, and I have an 88 Toyota 4Runner, and I put a new engine in it.
Good for you.
You personally did this?
Yes. I consult my father.
Yeah.
And he was always there for moral support, but I tightened all the bolts and did all that stuff.
Wow. Good for you.
And I'm really excited about it. I love this truck. But I have an embarrassing problem, because my valve covers are leaking, and it drips oil on the exhaust manifold, and so when I pull up and I'm so proud of my new truck, there's a cloud of oil smoke coming out of the engine.
Did you put a used engine in?
Well, it's a remanufactured, I guess, but it's the newest I could get. It was all shiny and...
Oh, cool.
So, and the valve covers are leaking, and I went to my boyfriend's dad, and I asked him about it, and he said whenever he puts in valve covers... Because I had the heads were new, but the valve covers are from the old engine. He said they can get a little misshapen, and so he always puts silicone in there.
Mm-mm.
And so my dad, when I came home, said, never do that. You don't ever need to put silicone. He's a purist, and if you have good gaskets, that's all you need.
Your dad is right.
So you took the valve covers off of your old car and put them on the new engine?
Right.
Yeah, because they didn't give you valve covers.
It came without valve covers.
Right.
Okay.
Well, these gaskets, if I'm not mistaken, it's just like a strip of rubber.
Yeah.
And it fits into a groove in the valve cover.
Exactly.
So that it's easy to put it in wrong, believe it or not. I would think that you didn't get the gasket in the groove all the way and a piece of it sticking out someplace, but it's too late. You've ruined those gaskets.
Uh-huh.
Now you have to take the valve covers off.
And get new gaskets.
And start a new one. I would buy them from the Toyota dealer, because they're real cheap.
Okay.
And stick them in, and do not use any kind of adhesive because it's not advisable. And silicone will make them squirm out of their little groove and guarantee that they leak.
Oh.
So don't use any silicone.
Okay.
And don't tighten them up too much.
Yeah, I did use a torque wrench, and I torqued them exactly the way the book said. And
well, the real question is, does it run well?
It runs great. I live on a mile-long pothole of a driveway, and I used to drive this little Plymouth, and it just got so beat up. And this truck is, oh, I love it.
Well, if the worst
thing, did you call it a mile-long pothole?
I swear.
If the worst thing that happened in this whole adventure was that the valve covers have leaked, then you've done amazingly well.
Thanks, guys.
See you, Mickey.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for
your
call.
There are a lot of nuts and bolts involved, aren't there?
Oh, I thought you were going to say there are a lot of nuts in California.
That too.
No, I think that was very courageous of her.
You ain't kidding.
Jump into this.
Jump into that and disconnect everything. It's great.
All right. It's time for us to take a short break. And when we come back, we're going to have the answer to last week's puzzler.
Oh, I can hardly wait.
No, you mean you can hardly remember.
That too.
Well, it turns out the puzzler was about the unusual behavior of the front tires of an unusual car.
Really? I don't remember this
at all. Well, I know you don't. And we'll be back with the whole story and more of your calls in just a minute.
So please stay tuned.
100 cups of coffee, 500 cigarettes, 1,000 miles of highway, and I ain't forgot her yet, but I keep on moving. I keep moving on down the line. There ain't nothing in my mirror, just a cloud of dust and smoke. But what do you expect when some old trucker's heart gets broke? The old trucker's hearts get broke. Well, them big wheels of rubber gonna rubber off of my mind. I'm a highway junkie, I need that old white line.
And even though the network's bond rating dips whenever Wall Street hears us say it, this is NPR.
Hey, if you'd like to hear more car talk.
Yeah, like if you're a dentist and want to remind your patients there are things more painful than a root canal.
You can download hundreds of classic car talk shows.
And by classic, we mean
old. Previously aired.
Exactly.
<you know.
laughs> Just go to cartalk.com and click where it says, listen to the show. Hi, we're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to talk about cars, car repair, and the answer to last week's puzzler.
I'm all ears.
You might want to work on that.
What do you mean?
Well, if you work on it, you might get to the point where you're like 90% ears and 10% brain, and that would be a huge improvement.
Yeah, it would, wouldn't it?
Anyway, this was from my drag racing series, and it was sent in by Kathy Sebastian, who sent us the following story. She didn't really send this story. I made up this story, but that's all right. Kathy will love it. When I was a kid back in the 60s, my dad fell in love with drag racing. It seemed that every weekend he would drag me to see these super loud slingshot rail dragsters. That's why I can't hear a thing to this day. Now, if you remember, these dragsters were really weird looking. They were very long, open-framed cars with humongously powerful engines positioned right in front of the driver who sat in a cage in the very back of the vehicle. The front tires, which were way up front, were essentially bicycle tires, believe it or not, and they were inflated to something like 80 PSI so as to minimize rolling resistance. You know, skinny little tires, high pressure, you got it, right?
Yeah.
The rear tires were just the opposite. The ones that were driven by the engine were these huge racing slicks inflated to like 10 PSI so as to maximize rolling resistance or traction. Even at that, those big fat tires would always manage to lose traction and start smoking before the dragster could get out of the gate. It made for great theater and a lot of extra noise, too. Well, when these cars started reaching quarter-mile speeds of 200 miles an hour and above, and they'd go a lot faster than that now, the crews noticed that after each run, the front tires came back with very low air pressure, in fact, almost flat. This phenomenon was not observed on the rear tires, but only on the fronts. The question was, what caused the front tires to deflate, and where was the air going, if any place, and why? Well, it turns out, you ready for this?
Yeah.
Centrifugal force was responsible. Because what was happening is as those front tires were turning at 200 miles an hour, the Schrader valve that's used to hold the air in was being pulled by centrifugal force and opening up.
No kidding.
No, that's what they said. I don't think kidding was exactly the word they used. But the valve was opening up and air pressure was being lost because the Schrader valve, it was just as if someone had stuck something in there to deflate the tire. But what was being done was that the tire was spinning so fast that the Schrader valve was actually opening up due to centrifugal force, letting air out, and at the end of the run, the tires would be flat. And they actually solved the problem by putting O-rings in the little caps so that even though the valve opened, the tires wouldn't lose pressure. Pretty cute, eh?
It's just cute, but it doesn't seem like it's possible.
Doesn't seem possible. That's probably, it might be, ball.
It might be.
We'll find out, but as far as I could ascertain, Kathy was right on. Anyway, do we have a winner?
We certainly do. Our winner is Stan Wilman from Bettendorf, Iowa. And for having his answer selected at random from among all the correct answers that we got, Stan's going to get a $26 gift certificate to the Shameless Commerce Division at CarTalk.com, with which Stan can get himself a set of CarTalk reusable shopping bags.
That's right. I mean, why tote around your rutabaga in an environmentally harmful plastic shopping bag when you could be coddling it in a cozy, recycled CarTalk bag?
Are we pro-rutabaga now?
Absolutely, man. Anyway, we have a new puzzler still to come, but that's after we take some more of your car questions at 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. A lawyer on CarTalk.
This is Scott from Saugerties, New York.
Hi,
Scott.
Saugerties, New York.
S-O-G-A-R-T-S-T-E-S or something like that?
S-A-U-G-E-R-T-I-E-S. It's some Dutch word.
Some Dutch word.
Yeah, it's the spelling of Socrates, but it's close enough. Anyway, Scott, what's going on, man?
Okay, well, I've got a unique car and a unique problem.
Yeah.
I have a 96 Suzuki X90.
Yes.
You were one of the people who bought one of those.
Yes. I actually know the other two people in my area that have them. We all wave to each other.
Well, they're the other two people in the country. This thing, I'm not sure how to describe this thing. It is a sedan.
It's a two-seater.
Yeah. It's very small.
Right. It's very tiny, and I get lots of looks.
What a schmo. So what's cooking?
Well, this past summer, at about 60,000 miles, the transmission started acting up, or maybe the clutch. Here's my deal. When I go to work, I drive about 50 miles, 30 miles highway, and then the last 20 miles is stop-and-go traffic. And about halfway through that, it gets really hard to shift, can't downshift into first, and when I get to my parking space and try to back in, put it in reverse, and it whines and grates and takes a long time to get into reverse. So I figured probably a clutch. Went to a mechanic last fall.
And probably
said,
not.
Okay, well, he said, yeah, you need a clutch.
He did?
That's what he said. He said,
well, go ahead. I'm so far, I'm with him.
Okay.
I'm not.
Okay. Well, it gets really interesting now, because he said $600, and I said, well, that's not in the budget right now. And this was last fall. Yeah. Now here's the fun thing. Starting around November, when it started getting cold, problem completely disappeared. Now, the weather's getting nice again.
Problem's back.
Yeah, and that clutch is now $750.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, inflation.
Well, here's what I think is
okay.
Go ahead. I mean, you were with that guy who said, I think you need a clutch?
Yeah, it sounded logical to me.
I'm talking to my brother.
Oh, okay.
Oh, I thought you were talking to Scott.
Talking to my brother.
No, yeah, I am. Except
why?
I think you're overlooking one piece. Here's what I think is wrong with your clutch.
Go ahead.
I think you have a bad pilot bearing.
Ooh.
Okay, and the pilot bearing is the thing that supports the very end of the transmission shaft. In fact, it's housed by the flywheel.
Okay.
Now, if it happens that that thing begins to bind up, then when you step on the clutch, the shaft, in fact, will not stop turning like it's supposed to.
Okay.
Which could make it very difficult to shift.
I gotcha.
And it could be that it's just worn out enough or bad enough so that in the very hot weather it does it. Or after you've been driving for a while, it does it.
You think so? Okay.
And we'll do it for $9.
Okay.
wait a minute. If you think it's the bearing, how is a clutch going to fix it?
Well, when he does the clutch, he's going to replace the pilot bearing. I mean, that's why when he said you need a clutch, If he doesn't replace the pilot bearing, you're going to have the same problem.
Okay.
So I'm not even sure it has a pilot bearing, first of all. But
Man, are you sure it doesn't have a hydraulic clutch?
No, I've never even driven one.
Man, I would sure check the hydraulic components of the clutch before I went ripping the transmission out.
Okay.
Well, because we can explain it. We can explain the temperature thing.
Yeah, I know, but that would be too easy.
Okay.
This guy checked that.
I'll bet he didn't.
I would call the Suzuki parts department, the dealership.
Okay.
And ask them if there is a pilot bearing.
Oh, okay.
And if they say no, then disregard everything we've just spoken about for the last 14 minutes. And look at the hydraulics. If it even has a hydraulic clutch, we don't know.
We don't know that either.
Well, I'll definitely call you back and let you know which one it is.
I'm afraid so, yeah. See you later, man.
Thanks
for your call.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, you know what time it is now?
Time to cut the grass in the oil change bay?
No. It's time to play Stump the Chump! This is the part of the show where we check in with a previous caller to see if we committed a sin of omission, commission, or
transmission. So who's our lucky contestant this week?
This week it's Michelle from Illinois. Do you remember Michelle? Neither do I.
No.
It says here Michelle had an accident involving the front end of her 97 Saturn. When she got the car back from the body shop, it wouldn't start. It was totally dead. So she did what any mature adult would do. She had a hissy fit and pounded on the steering wheel, jumped up and down on the hood, and lo and behold, the dash lights came on. So she came up with an inventive solution to get it to start.
What I did was I put my foot outside of the car and I rocked it back and forth and back and forth and back and forth until I got enough momentum that I could hit the ignition switch when the lights came on, and it started.
All right, so...
So, what's wrong with it?
Doesn't anyone screen these calls? I mean, I don't even understand the question.
No, she's not getting current.
Yeah.
There's a wire that goes between the engine and the chassis of the car and then eventually to the battery. And that is the ground path or the return path for all the electricity that comes out of the battery. So if the electricity can't get back...
We call them little Eddie and Edie Electron.
We do, huh? Okay. So if little Eddie Electron can't get back home, then he won't leave.
That's what my wife always says. He won't leave. I've done everything. He won't leave.
Well, let's see how we did. Michelle, are you there?
I'm here.
All right, look,
here.
Before we find out which was groundless, your circuit or our answer, we need you to confirm that we have not spoken since your last appearance on Car Talk. Is that true?
I have not spoken to you since my last appearance.
Great. And is it also true that the answer you're about to give here on Stump the Chumps has not been influenced by our staff, the staff of National Public Radio, or by the anger management counselors you've been working with, all the $20 that we sent you?
Absolutely not.
Okay.
Okay. Was it in the battery circuit, Michelle?
It absolutely was in the battery circuit. And they must have listened to the show.
What was it, the gas cap?
They must have listened to the show because they were so embarrassed. They paid for my car rental.
No kidding. And what did they actually replace? Was it the ground strap?
No, you know, they just hooked the battery up, like you said.
Oh, it wasn't tight.
Right.
Yeah, it was a loose connection.
Oh, that's of right. Course they would be embarrassed.
Right. But you shamed them into it. They must have listened, and you shamed them into it. Into paying for my car rental.
Great.
Yeah.
Well, that's wonderful, and it's especially wonderful to be right. This is like the first time in months that we've been right on Stump the Chump, so I guess that $20 really does work out.
Well, thank you so much, you guys.
And thanks for playing Stump the Chumps, Michelle.
I'm happy to do it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Right again. I mean, right. Again? If you hear someone on the show that you'd like us to bring back for Stump the Chumps, you can email your suggestion from cartalk.com.
Or if you can't wait, you can call and stump us right now. The number is 888-CAR-TALK. That's 8-882-782-55. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, I'm Sarah from Cranford, New Jersey.
Cranford?
Yes.
Cranford. New Jersey. I got
okay.
It.
What's up, Sarah, baby?
I have a 1993 Mercury Villager.
Okay.
I went away for the weekend about a month ago, and my husband stayed home with our 8 and 4-year-old sons. And when they came to the airport to pick me up and I got in the car, it smelled funny. Mm. And I was happy to see them, and we're talking, and I said, what's that smell? And they said, we don't smell anything. And then we came home, and I walked in the house, and the house smelled funny. And I said, what's that smell? And they said, we don't smell anything. And it took me about a day to find, like, a half-drunk milk sippy cup underneath the sofa. So I took care of that. But the car smells like urine. And we live in New Jersey, and it's really humid and horrible, and it's awful. So I cleaned the car, I cleaned the booster seat, and my four-year-old and I are spraying Febreze on all the upholstered furniture, and I took it to the car wash, and they sprayed some big jar of lemon stuff in there.
Yeah.
And the inside is now much better, but when you turn the car on and put on either the vent with the air or the AC, it's like urine air. It's horrible, and I need you to
So you think they had like a peeing contest in the car? Go ahead. You first. No, no. You first. Ma's going to kill us. Sorry. Ma's away. She won't know.
Dad likes it. Dad won't care.
Dad can't smell anything.
I know. No one's admitting anything.
So what were you thinking when you went away? Where were you? Where did you go that was so important?
Yeah, what are you,
dare
nuts?
To leave them with your car.
I'm never leaving them with the car again.
No.
No.
I don't think they had anything to do with it.
Why?
Oh, I do.
Because I'm siding with them. That's it.
No, you have to help me.
No, because the fact that you say it comes out worse when you turn on the air conditioning suggests to me that the smell is not in the vehicle, but in the vents.
Exactly.
Really?
Exactly.
And if they didn't pee
I mean, they
in
would
the
have
vents,
had they would have had to have been hanging by their feet from a tree under which your car was parked and peeing into the vents.
Wait,
do you think they could have done that?
Do you have a sunroof?
No.
Oh, they couldn't have done it. With the sunroof, I can imagine how they would do it. But I don't think they did do it. And I think they've been unjustly accused, and I think you should beg for forgiveness.
I think so, too. So if you accused your husband?
No.
So you smell the smell, but he, when you confront him and say, for example, do you smell that, hun? He says, I don't smell anything.
He says, nothing happened.
Nothing happened, because in his mind, nothing did happen.
That's right.
And what has happened, however, is that your evaporator drain for your air conditioner has gotten plugged up.
Oh.
And the evaporator drain is designed to drain out the water that your air conditioner removes from the car.
Mm-hmm.
Your evaporator drain is plugged up. And that water that's in there has begun to grow mold.
Oh.
And that's what you think smells like urine. It's mold. Of course, they may have peed in it, too.
They may have. But I don't think
so. And we'll never know.
Just a good measure.
But it's if you go to your shop, garage, whatever, and ask them to clean it out, they can probably do it.
What they will do is they will spray compressed air into the drain. And when they do that, it should clear the drain and the water should come out. And as such, a lot of the mold spores will disappear, too. But then there are certain chemicals, and Febreze may not be a bad one to use, but I think there are probably better ones that you can get at an auto parts store.
Mm-hmm.
We've used a thing called Frigifresh. I don't know if they still make it. And you spray it in the vents, which are right in front of your windshield, on the outside of the vehicle.
Okay.
And you run the air conditioner system, and what that does is it will suck in that air along with that stuff you sprayed in, and it should kill the mold spores. And the way it usually works is, it's about a 3-to-1 trade-off. For every 3 mold spores you kill, you lose 1 brain cell.
Yeah.
Okay, well,
but
thank
that's
you
a good
much.
Trade-off.
It's not bad. You have your husband do it. He's probably not using them anyway.
Thank you very much.
Good luck, Sarah, and apologize to the kids.
Oh, really?
I think so.
I think you should take them out for ice cream.
Okay, I will.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Sorry for all the things. It would be good if your wife could apologize to you for all the things that she thought you did.
But most of them, she thought I did.
You really did.
Okay, Tommy, look, it's time for us to take a little break so our stations can pass along some important messages.
You mean like traffic, weather, stuff like that?
No, messages about distancing, disclaimers, and denying, you know?
The usual. We'll be back with more of your calls and a brand new Puzzler in a minute, so please stay tuned.
It's 14 miles of stones and dirt through the woods outside of town. Once a year they send a crew to push the dirt around. The pavement ends, dirt begins, it's all you need to know.
someone should have told you not to take Algery Road. Oh, I don't care what the map may say, there's a better way than Algery Road. I don't care what the map may say, there's a better way than Algery Road. Now, summertime, you'll be okay if you watch out for the stones. Wintertime, you take that road, you take it all alone. It's hard to keep it on the road with all the ice and snow. And if your car goes over, it'll be days before they know. Oh, I don't care what the map may say, there's a better way than Algery Road. Hell, I don't care what the map may say, there's a better way than Algery Road.
And even though Carthusian monks send us brochures on the benefits of a lifetime of silence whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR. Ha! We're back. You're listening to Car Talk with us, Click and Clack, the Tappert Brothers, and we're here to discuss cars, car repair, and the new Puzzler. This came in from Ted Getchman, and I don't know where he's from. He's out in the cyberspace.
Yeah.
And, but I'm going to... use this, and I'm prepared. The answer may be controversial. I'm going to say that in advance, and I'm prepared to take the heat. Well, Ted and I are.
We know his email address. We're going to forward everything right to him.
He says, recently I had a hankering to read Edward Gibbon's three-volume set, The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. No small undertaking, considering there are exactly 2,500 pages of text, illustrations, and whatnot in each volume.
Ooh.
Well, it was the Roman Empire. Around a long time. Sadly, as I reached for them on the shelf, I could see that mold had damaged every page and cover from the front of Volume 1, though that cover was undamaged, to the back cover of Volume 3, though it, too, was undamaged.
But everything in between was mold.
I called a local book repairer, and he said that it would cost a penny a page and 50 cents a cover to repair. He says, bring the affected volumes over and come back in a week. I'll be all done. So I show up in a week, prepared to pay the bill, and it's about half of what I expected it to be. The question is, how much was it? The hint that it was half a hint. The statement that it was half is a hint.
Yeah.
Now, if you think you know the answer, write it on the back of a 20-horsepower, tank-mounted, rotary-screw, continuous-duty, pulsation-free Ingersoll Rand Model UP6-20 air compressor with pre-filter and integrated dryer, and send it to... We're having a little problem at the shop. Puzzler Tower, Car Talk Plaza, Box 3500, Harvard Square, Cambridge.
Our fair city.
Matt 02238. Or, of course, you can email us your answer from cartalk.com. Call us right now if you have a question. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, this is Greg from Columbus, Georgia.
Greg?
Greg.
Yes. I have a 2000 Ford Focus. And when I went to the local car wash here, they have a dial that says steam clean your engine. And I would like to do that, but I'm afraid that whatever is the solution that they use to clean it, that I'll get that on the fuse box near the firewall. Would steam cleaning the car, would it do any damage?
Yeah, don't steam clean it.
Don't steam
clean. Leave it alone. Was it dirty?
Well, I just want to keep the car for a good long time.
Well, it doesn't care if it's dirty. You know, it's like warthogs. They don't care if they get dirty. I mean, they're perfectly happy being dirty. And your engine, I mean, with rare exceptions, is happy being dirty, too. I mean, think of the environment it operates in. There's dust and dirt and mud and water and slush and stuff always around it.
Yeah.
And it's okay to get dirty. And it's not okay to get water in places that you shouldn't get water. And I think that people who do these kinds of cleaning, and there are certainly lots of people who do it, and if they're well-trained and they do it carefully, there's no harm.
Okay.
But if you get some high school kid who's trying to make an extra few bucks on the side, and he's steam cleaning everything, and it may be well-intentioned. I mean, he's trying to do a good job, or she's trying to do a good job, but they do stuff like short out your relays or something because they sprayed stuff where it shouldn't be sprayed. Of course, what's the first thing they're going to do? They're going to deny it. Well, we didn't do that. Yeah. And you might be out $700.
Ooh, whoa.
I would leave it alone. If the dirt in the engine isn't bothering you, then forget about it.
I can do that. How much would something like that cost?
I know you're going to do it. I got the feeling that this is a done deal. You got the coupons already, didn't you? $10 off on steam cleaning.
How much would something like that cost if I took it to a particular service?
Oh, a place that's specialized in it?
Yes, sir.
Well, if you wanted them to damage your computer, it's $39.95. If you don't, it's $69.95. I don't know. I would imagine somewhere around $30, $40, $50 at least.
I won't do it then.
No, forget about it.
I won't do it.
It's not you know, we have this obsession in this country with cleanliness. I mean, they're not just engine cleanliness, but we try to kill every bug we come in contact with, you know. And,
I understand there are people who take showers in this country as well. I mean, what the hell is that all
about?
I wish
you were one of them. Greg, leave well enough alone.
Yes, sir.
It'll be fine.
Yes, sir.
And something else is going to kill this thing before the germs do. Don't worry.
Okay. Hey, good luck, Greg.
Thank you.
See you, Greg. Bye-bye. 888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hello, Tom. Hello, Ray. This is Vladimir from Moundsview, Minnesota.
Vladimir.
You're from Minnesota?
Yes.
Where are you from, actually, originally?
I'm from Bulgaria.
Oh, Bulgaria.
That would be like east of Italy. Is that correct?
Yes.
Almost.
Yeah.
It's near Romania.
Okay, Romania is north of Bulgaria.
Yeah.
It's between Romania, Greece, and Yugoslavia.
So Yugoslavia would be to the southwest of Bulgaria. Is that correct?
Not exactly. You're very close.
Yeah, you're very close. Northeast.
West, yes. Yeah.
But we have a rough idea where Bulgaria is. We know you're from there.
Yeah.
Our real problem is, where's Minnesota?
Well, I consider myself a Minnesotan already.
You really?
And do you live in northern Minnesota or in the middle?
Well, this is one of the suburbs of St. Paul. If you think about Boston, it's like Melrose or Medford.
Oh, so how do you know that?
Well, I tried to study.
So you've never been to Boston?
No.
But you know where Melrose is. I don't know where Melrose is.
If someone said, how do you get to Melrose, I wouldn't be able to tell them. So why are you calling us, Vladimir?
Well, I'm driving a wonder car. You can't believe. This is a 88 Ford Taurus.
Mm-hmm.
And it has 179,000 miles on it.
Yeah.
When I brake, the car starts jerking. And it's not happening every time I'm braking.
When you say it's jerking, do you mean that it feels like it's stopping and then not stopping and stopping and then not stopping? Is that what you mean by jerking? In other words, is the jerking in the forward direction or in a side-to-side direction?
No, it's along the length of the car.
Right. Yes. In other words, it's surging back and forth.
Okay. But it's braking okay.
It stops all right.
Yes.
And sometimes it doesn't do this hardly at all.
Sometimes it's gone almost.
I think it's the brakes. I think the disc rotors are warped.
Uh-huh.
Here's what I think is wrong.
See, my brother has to explain why it's there sometimes and not there other times, since the rotor, which is warped, is there all the time.
Except,
okay. That's the problem.
Except if both rotors are warped.
Okay.
If both rotors are... Now, stick with me here.
I like it already.
If both rotors are warped, there will be times when the warp will come around simultaneously.
And other times when it doesn't.
Cancels out. You can't do it unless the number is two.
Unless the number is two.
It's a tough road to hold here, Vladimir. But I think that if both rotors are warped...
Yep.
There are times, because the way the thing works, and the reason you'll feel the shaking in the car, and especially in your brake pedal, is that when the warp comes around, it pushes back on the pads, and that pressure gets telegraphed back to your brake pedal.
Okay.
And you feel this pulsing, and you'll also feel the car going jerking back and forth.
Yes.
So what happens when one of those things is warped, you feel it every single time.
Yeah.
But if both are warped, they can be in phase or out of phase. Imagine if one warp was coming when one dip was coming. They cancel right out. You wouldn't feel anything. And, of course, we know this can happen because the front wheels are always turning at different speeds unless you're going straight ahead.
Yeah.
Are you buying this?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, good.
I trust you 100%. But I have a question. Who is wrong and who is right?
No, I mean, I like this theory. I don't believe it, but I like it only because it's so beautiful. And it's very easy to test. You can just go to any shop that does brakes.
Yes.
And they will measure the warpness.
The runout.
Of both rotors. And they'll tell you that, yeah, both rotors are warped.
Okay.
And whether the theory is correct or not, it won't matter because you'll have to replace them both.
Yeah.
And when you do and the jerking goes away, it doesn't matter if the theory was right or not, as long as it fixed it.
Okay.
As long as you get to land on the moon. It doesn't matter if the equations are right.
Exactly.
So I think I would go. I'm sticking with it, Vladimir.
Yeah, okay. I'm sticking with you, too, because I believe everything you say.
I know. Well, let us know how you make out.
Oh, thank you, Tom. Thank you, Ray.
We'll see you in Melrose someday. Bye-bye.
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 1-888-CAR-TALK. That's 888-227-8255. Hello, you're on Car Talk.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Who's this?
This is Ronnie.
Ronnie.
Hello.
Hi, Ronnie.
Hi.
Where are you from, Ronnie?
I live now in Fort Lauderdale.
Oh, Fort Lauderdale.
Fort Lauderdale.
Do you have blue hair?
Blue hair, not quite. Working on it. We're all working on it, aren't we, guys?
We're not working
on blue hair.
No,
I'm working on no hair.
There you go.
But I'd be happy with blue hair.
There you go. No, not quite blue. Thanks anyway.
All right.
I'll look forward to that, however.
So what's shaking?
Okay, I have a very technical question to challenge your expertise.
All right.
Turn your thinking caps.
Okay,
I'm ready.
Okay, you ready?
Yeah.
Okay, for the past 20 years, I've always had a white car. Okay? Here's the technical question.
Yeah.
Get ready. I'm about to purchase a new car and decide to be really wild and go for a black car.
Really?
My husband cooperatively responded with a resounding, "Are you nuts? How can we have a black car in Florida where the average temperature is like 85 and the humidity is like 100%?
Yeah.
We will fry." Anyway, we went to the car dealer, and sure enough, side by side were two black and white cars.
Right.
Yeah.
And my husband pointed out, touch one, it's going to be about 20 degrees cooler than the other.
Mm-hmm.
The dealer quickly said to us, no, even though the black one is hotter on the outside, it doesn't make a difference in the inside. That it only takes like 0.7 of a second for air conditioning unit with these great new cars where they're built to kick on and make the temperature internally exactly the same.
0.7 seconds?
0.7. Okay.
Yeah.
To which
was he wearing plaid pants, this guy?
Of course not. Why? It's too hot in Florida.
He wasn't wearing any pants.
That's right.
Okay.
So, wait, it goes on. My husband said, you mean the law of physics doesn't apply to cars? Now, it's important for you to understand that the white car, I found out afterwards, is actually already sold.
That doesn't surprise me.
Which canceled out the dealer's advice totally.
Completely.
So here's my question, my technical question.
Yeah.
Does it really make a difference inside of a car, whether it's black or white on the outside?
Yes.
Both, it does.
Sure it does.
I'm not going to have my husband listen to the show whenever it is.
Well,
on.
Sure.
Honey, I mean, you're listening.
If you've ever had, for example, a convertible with black seats.
Well, right? No, I think Ronnie's question is, if the metal, the sheet metal of the car were white as opposed to black, but the interior were the same color.
There you go.
Would it make a difference? And I don't think it makes a difference in that sense.
That's what I'm asking.
What if you had a car with no air conditioning? Would it be hotter in the black car or in the white car? Answer, it would be hotter in the black car.
Right.
Everyone knows that the white car will reflect away much of the heat that's coming in. Or not much. Some of it.
Right.
How much of a difference will there be? Who knows? But your husband is at least theoretically correct that the black car will be hotter. Now you add air conditioning. You say, well, I can't even tell the difference. Well, that's true. But the air conditioner is working harder to keep the black car cool than it would be keeping the white car cool.
So he was right, is what you're telling
me. Yes,
I'm telling
you that your husband is right.
He is right.
We think.
Whether it makes any practical difference, except in the life of the longevity of the air conditioning system, I don't know.
I would doubt that would be too much of a factor. However, we are getting perilously close to the arena of electric trailer brakes.
Okay.
If you ever heard our discussion about
cattle trailer
electric brakes,
mm-hmm.
about which we know nothing.
Right.
It didn't prevent us, however, from going on a long 10-minute dissertation.
There you go.
You know, so we may know nothing about this topic.
Yeah.
But I do remember, I would definitely avoid a dark interior. I remember some years ago wearing shorts.
Ouch.
And getting into a Cadillac with a black leather interior.
Yeah.
And hearing, it sounded like I had gone to the Bisutake Steakhouse, and they had thrown a raw piece of meat onto that 1,000-degree grill. And that same sound was there, that sizzling.
Did it have a delicious barbecue smell as well?
Well, not really. Well, and you also know that all the Latin American dictators wear white shirts.
There you go. Now that I don't want to say anything
else. That makes my decision.
Exactly. I mean, that says it all, doesn't it?
So go for white, Ronnie.
Oh, thanks, guys. Again, blue hair and a white car. I'll fit in perfectly.
You'll be great. Send us a picture.
Thanks, guys.
See you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's happened again. You've underutilized. No, you've outright squandered another perfectly good hour listening to Car Talk. Our esteemed producer is Doug the Subway Fugitive, not a slave to fashion, Bongo Boy Berman. Our associate producers are Louis Cronin, the Barbarian, and David the Calves of Belleville Green. Our web lackey is Doug the Old Gray Mare. Our engineer is John Cartman Parati. And our technical, spiritual, and menu advisor, just back from the port of Spain, Eglomaine, Calves Brain, Quiche Lorraine, Seven Grain, Dry Champagne, and Aspartame Diet in Vain, is John Bugsy Lawler. Our public opinion pollster is Paul Murky of Murky Research, assisted by statistician Margin Overa. Our customer care representative is Haywood Jabuzoff. Our director of top secret strategy is Donatello Nobody.
I won't.
Our sexual harassment investigator is Hank Pankey. Our former brake service manager is Carson DeLake. Our Puerto Vallarta transmission specialist is Cinco de Mayo. Our staff termite inspector is Luke Underwood. Our eBay specialist is Selma Junkoff. Our Russian chauffeur is Pikoff and Dropoff. And our seat cushion tester is Mike Easter. Of course, as always, our chief counsel from the law firm of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe is Hugh Lewis Dewey, known to the Sid Vicious lookalikes in Harvard Square as Huey Louie Dewey. Thanks so much for listening. We're Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers. And, of course, don't drive like my brother.
Of course, don't like... And, of course, don't drive like my brother. I got lost there. I got carried away. I had a whole line. I couldn't handle
it. Can't count on you people for anything. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
I fell asleep.
You can get a podcast of this show, which is number 1019, mosey through the Car Talk archives, or check out our clothing and CD collections all over at cartalk.com, or you can call the Shameless Commerce Division at 888-CAR-JUNK.
Also this week at cartalk.com, it's the blogging lot.
Right. I mean, where can you find people who are unusual, opinionated, and informed about all things automotive?
Gee, I was with you until you said informed.
No, well, it's not us. It's our CarTalk.com bloggers. This week, Jimmy Mortavalli blogs about the hydrogen highway being built on the East Coast, and he reviews Ford's new electric delivery van, the 2011 Transit Connect.
Cool.
Yeah, the blogging lot also has a regular spot for a guest blogger.
As long as it's not any of my ex-wives.
No promises, no promises, man. Check out the blogging lot.
You'll find it on the homepage at CarTalk.com.
Car Talk is a production of Dewey, Cheatham & Howe and WBUR in Boston.
And even though the entire Shackleton expedition votes to spend another winter in Antarctica whenever they hear us say it, this is NPR.